From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells.
Our guest is Dr. Brendan Spiegel. He's the author of a new book called VRX, How Virtual Therapeutics Will Revolutionize Medicine. In this new book, Dr. Spiegel shows us how a simple VR, virtual reality headset, can change medicine for the better. He introduces us to the woman who endures an exceptionally painful labor by completing breathing exercises on a digital beach. The schizophrenic patient who literally confronts the demon inside his head, and many others. Dr. Spiegel, we're so glad you could join us on Cool Science Radio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start here with the schizophrenic who can talk to the demon inside his head with the help of virtual reality.
Yeah, well, this is one of many examples where virtual reality is changing how we think about therapeutics for some of the most difficult to treat patients. Schizophrenia, as you may know, is a condition that affects about 1% of the population. And people can have hallucinations where they can see a demon in their own mind. And with virtual reality, what therapists can do now is they can recreate that demon in their mind and have them wear a headset and literally confront that demon, that voice, through a process called trialogue therapy. Not dialogue, but trialogue. So it's a conversation between the patient, their own inner voice, and their therapist, who is sitting in another room and through a microphone can speak through the demon's avatar within their mind. And over time, the patient can learn how to push back against their inner voice through a form of cognitive behavioral therapy, all occurring in a virtual world.
That is fantastic. So how about the efficacy? How long does it last?
Yeah, so there's been some research now, including a couple randomized controlled trials looking at this form of virtual trialogue therapy. And the data indicate that it's even more effective than medications for treating hallucinations in schizophrenia. And it's really has a very large effect size statistically. So it looks like it's effective and that there's a persistent benefit. Long after the headsets come off, people continue to have a reduction in their hallucinations.
I wanted to ask you, there's a percentage of people that have problems getting into a hypnotic state because they can't let go. But with virtual reality, is there a percentage of people that it doesn't work for?
Yeah, so, you know, this idea of getting into a hypnotic state is sort of an intense version of what we like to think of as flow, a flow state. And that's sort of when you're thinking without thinking. And, you know, Buddhist monks spend 40,000 hours of practice getting to the point where they can turn off their ruminating mind. And, you know, people who meditate are trying to inhibit that ruminating mind. And that's essentially what hypnotherapy achieves as well in a different way. And VR, it looks like in many cases acts almost like a psychedelic. People call it a cyberdelic. So it can inhibit the ruminating mind when it's used effectively. It doesn't work in everybody, just like meditation doesn't work in everybody. But we've used it now in over 3,000 patients in our hospital at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. And people have used it all around the world. And when used correctly at the right person, the right time, VR can achieve a flow state very much like a deep meditative state.
And in your testing, is there a combination of virtual reality with other therapeutics?
Yeah, some psychologists and psychiatrists are starting to combine ketamine with virtual reality. Ketamine is a form of a psychedelic that is often used for managing pain in particular. But when combined with virtual reality, some therapists are finding that it leads to a more consistent benefit. So yeah, there's some folks experimenting with different combinations of therapeutics and virtual therapeutics.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, our guest is Dr. Brennan Spiegel. He's the author of a new book, VRX, How Virtual Therapeutics Will Revolutionize Medicine. Sure. Any woman who has ever gone through childbirth knows that if you can just control your mind, that will help control your body. And we've all done those breathing exercises and visualizations and that sort of thing. But VR is another tool that that evolves to take us much further into steering away from the pain. So talk about how that works.
Yeah. So, of course, I've never gone personally through childbirth, but have now worked with a number of women who have used virtual reality through the process of labor and delivery and have completed a study together with our colleagues in obstetrics and gynecology using virtual reality as a sort of Lamaze-style breathing experience. And so in the book, I talk about Erin Martucci, who is the first woman in the world, at least documented, to have gone through labor using virtual reality. And in it, she had this environment where she was breathing in and out, and the microphone in the headset can detect her breathing. And as it detects her breathing, she could blow life into a tree, or she could change this virtual world that she's in, almost like she's in a sort of psychedelic environment. And in the book, I tell her story how she felt like the labor was only an hour long, when in fact it was many hours long, and time somehow accelerated. And this has now been reproduced in two randomized controlled trials, one at Cedars-Sinai, one at the University of Michigan, where it reduced not just the physical experience of pain, but also the time spent thinking about the pain and the unpleasantness of the experience. So both the sensory, but also the affective and cognitive components of pain seem to be dampened down when people are using virtual reality during labor and delivery.
Dr. Spiegel, does the medical insurance pay for all of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's still evolving. Insurance companies are looking carefully at VR, because we now have over 5,000 studies. This is not, you know, some niche area. We have over 5,000 studies showing benefits of VR. We talked about schizophrenia. We've talked about it for pain. It's been used for anxiety, depression, PTSD, phobias. And many therapists are using it now in their psychology practices. But in general, insurance does not yet reimburse the use of VR, although they're looking at it very carefully. We've worked with some insurance companies, and we're also trying to get some codes so that when doctors use this procedure, they can get reimbursed for it as well. And we're hoping in the next, you know, year or two that we'll see more traction. But even without that, we're seeing many, many hospitals, over 200 hospitals around the U.S. are using VR for all sorts of purposes, even outside of getting paid for it, just because it's the right thing to do and it's helping patients.
And you also talk about at the end of your book about a virtual hospital of the future. And you bring in some folks, Candace, who has fibromyalgia and back pain, Marcus has a stroke, Ramon has a heart attack. Why don't you pick one of those possible stories in the future and take us through what it's going to look like?
Yeah, so, you know, the example of a stroke, which is something that I think we all can relate to because it's such a common, unfortunately common condition. We all, you know, may have experienced one or know somebody who's had a stroke. And, you know, how can VR help here? So you think about after, let's say you've had a stroke and can't move your right arm. How do we get the right arm to start moving again? Well, there's physical therapy, but is there a way to accelerate that? And it turns out there are currently right now, not even in the future, VR programs that are FDA cleared to help with stroke recovery. And the way it works is you can imagine you put yourself in virtual reality and you can look out and see your arms. There are digital doppelgangers of your arms. And you know, a therapist may say, okay, can you move your right arm? And you just realize I can't really move it, but now try moving your left arm. No problem, I can move my left arm. But in the virtual reality, everything is flipped like a mirror. So it looks like you're moving your right arm. And your brain believes for a moment there that you now have full and complete control over your right arm, when in fact you're only moving your left arm, but the computer has swapped it. So in this virtual world, you look and feel as if you get full control. And what's amazing is if you look from the outside, you might see a little flicker of movement in that right arm. because the brain is what we call plastic. It's not a block of Play-Doh in our skull. The brain can move and reshape itself and can constantly update itself. And the idea of VR is we may be able to tap into neural circuits that are effective and still viable, but we couldn't, under normal circumstances, access that capability. And VR gives us this ability to sort of reanimate those neural circuits.
A moment ago, you talked about the use of ketamine along with these virtual reality tours, I guess you'd call them. And we know that ketamine is also used in the treatment of depression. So you were talking about schizophrenia before, but I would only imagine that there could be some sort of reset in the brain in terms of depression using virtual reality and something like ketamine.
Absolutely. And, you know, Michael Pollan has written a terrific book, New York Times bestseller, on psychedelics for depression, anxiety, pain, addictions. And even a single dose of a psychedelic like psilocybin, the magic mushroom ingredient, can provide benefits that go on for months or years even. And it's the sort of reboot of the brain is the way it's sort of thought of. The question is VR like a cyberdelic that's as powerful? And there has been a head-to-head study that I talk about in the book of psilocybin versus a form of a cyberdelic that achieved similar experiences. But we need longer term data to see if it can really help with anxiety, depression. But we do actually have studies with depression right now. And I talk about that in the book through a slightly different mechanism with VR. It's a form of talk therapy. And of course, the idea of talk therapy is you talk with somebody other than yourself who can give you the headspace to see yourself a little bit differently, because we are trapped into our own often unhealthy ruminating minds that kind of reinforce narratives that can be destructive. And we need help from somebody else to recalibrate those narratives. So in VR, and I tell the story in the book, I was able to go to the University of Barcelona where they put me in a room and I was sitting across from my former mentor, Daniel Dennett, who's a famous philosopher of mind at Tufts University. And I'm sitting across from him and I had a whole conversation with him about myself. But the crazy thing was I had to move myself into his body and speak back to me in his voice. The computer permuted my voice to sound like his. I was in his body and I kept switching back and forth across the table. And I realized I was able to have a very full conversation with myself, but as if I was talking to somebody else. And that paradigm is now being used for depression, where people can speak with themselves, but in the form of Sigmund Freud, let's say, or Mother Teresa, or whoever the heck you want to speak with, you actually can speak to yourself through their body and mind. And there's evidence that it actually can alleviate depression, which is incredible.
I would imagine that it would work as well for things like OCD, and you mentioned anxiety. Just telling yourself a different story about, well, I just think of OCD, you know, someone who can't leave the house until they've sanitized all the, you know, the doorknobs or whatever it is, that you could employ virtual reality in this sort of instance as well.
Absolutely, yeah. OCD and other anxiety-related conditions, there's quite a bit of literature, including post-traumatic stress, which is not quite the same, but another, it's in the spectrum of intense anxiety syndromes. All of those have been used with virtual reality. So, you know, and another example would be combat soldiers who have been through very traumatic experiences. And now if they even hear, you know, of a car backfire, they can go into an absolute panic thinking they're back in, you know, a war zone. And so Skip Rizzo is a professor at University of Southern California, has been using virtual reality for years to put these soldiers back into war zones. In virtual reality, and they can, to the point where they smell the diesel fuel, they can actually pump in the diesel fuel smell. They have vibrating Humvees that they drive around in, and they can reproduce the experiences of anxiety and panic and have them wired up with heart rate monitors and other biosensors, and then continue to expose them over and over again until they achieve a sort of a resilience to it, and realize that they do have control over their mind and body, but it's through practice and repeating that experience over and over again in VR. It's hard, you know, you could think about it, But in VR, you are literally there and your brain thinks you're there again. But if you do it with a therapist and in a guided way, I can start to overcome those maladaptive cognitions.
Dr. Spiegel, there was something in your book that surprised me. And you were telling the story of Molly Easterlin, who's a pediatrician at Cedars-Sinai, and she thought it'd be a good idea to use VR while her patients were receiving intravenous medication because it can take upward of an hour while you're sitting in a chair. And what she discovered was that some parents didn't want their kids to suffer unnecessarily, but they thought that going through the procedure itself would actually build character. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was a bit of a surprise, but it kind of speaks to the power of VR that distinguishes it from any other audiovisual medium that we have. Like you wouldn't necessarily hear parents expressing concern that their kids were watching TV during an infusion, but sitting through a VR headset felt different. And I understand. And the idea was, wow, are we putting a Band-Aid on them by bringing their minds away to these, you know, playing games or just in some other beautiful environment, swimming with dolphins, and not paying attention to the fact that you're a patient? And is it a mind game to distract them from the pain of being a patient? And I think that's an interesting, almost philosophical question, maybe an ethical question, especially with kids. Because with young kids, there's evidence that they can literally believe what they're seeing. You know, like adults know that it's not real, even though it feels real, but kids may literally take that in as a memory that's lasting. And the question that comes up is, well, is that so bad if a child's going through a spinal tap that they only remember that they were swimming with dolphins? Is that a bad thing? Or should we have allowed them to feel that spinal tap? Because that was the real world. And I don't know that I have an answer to it, but what the passage you highlight emphasizes that some people worry, particularly with kids, that that it's maybe unethical to take their mind off of a painful experience. I think there's a fine line in there somewhere, and I think it's an important conversation.
And Dr. Spiegel, now that we have moved out of the gaming world to all these other applications, how are we doing with content? Because you're probably not producing your own content. You're getting content that other people have put together. Is there enough content out there for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I named the book VRX, obviously a little play on words because RX is a prescription. And the reason I did that is if VR is a therapy, then we need a VR pharmacy. We need a shelf, so to speak, of digiceuticals that a doctor like me can reach for. I wouldn't be a very good doctor if I used the same medicine in every person. And same with VR. I need to think about using the right software for the right patient at the right time. And this isn't some magic wand, by the way. I mean, it's being used in partnership with traditional medications and traditional therapies, but it can augment those traditional approaches if we have the right software. So there are more and more companies that are, some of which are going through FDA regulatory processes. The FDA now acknowledges this as a field of medicine. The FDA calls it MXR, which is medical extended reality. So they now have actually named this field MXR, and you're seeing more software going through the regulatory process, which requires a higher level of evidence than just some health and wellness software. With Oculus, which is, you know, the Facebook company, there's now an online store, which is an opportunity to access large amounts of software, most of which is not evidence-based, not FDA cleared. So that's why it's important that we have clinicians that can help guide patients around the right therapy for the right patient at the right time. And I have a whole chapter of the book that sort of addresses that.
This is just fascinating. You know, we have spent a handful of interviews talking to those who work in VR and in the medical school at the University of Utah, and fascinating what they're doing. And mostly they're talking about how they train medical students to do procedures with VR, which is a completely different thing, really, than you're talking about. But it all ties together beautifully. We've learned some great words here today: digiceuticals, cyberdelics, and what a fascinating book that you've written. Dr. Brennan Spiegel, he's the author of VRX, How Virtual Therapeutics Will Revolutionize Medicine. Thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio. It's been great having you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Spiegel.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.